morning, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. First day of November 2013. Boy, the time is flying. The calendar is on the move. Madness seems to pervade America, especially coming from Washington, D.C. And here we are, another Friday, and it's always good to join you. For those of you who are new to the program, I welcome you. As I just said, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm a retired senior special agent with the Former Immigration and Naturalization Service. This program is all about providing the information that you're probably not going to hear in too many other places, perhaps nowhere else in point of fact. Increasingly, the news media could really rename most of those networks Pravda and Izvestia in terms of willingness to cover issues that are of major concern to every American in every part of America. This isn't about being conservative. It's not about being liberal. It's not about anything except being American. My emphasis is generally on the immigration laws of the United States and what is or is not being done to enforce those laws, secure the borders, and the impact that this has on all of our lives because, as I always like to point out, immigration is not a single issue, but a singular issue that hammers everything from national security and criminal justice, public safety, the economy, unemployment, health care and public health, education, and quality of life issues and the environment. So a whole host of issues all wrapped into one, and it comes back to immigration. And increasingly, if you have been noticing, the major television programs will almost never, ever not only use the word alien, but the word immigration. So that is primarily the focus of the program. Of course, those of you who listen regularly know that sometimes we do get into some other topics. But today, once again, immigration in the spotlight. My good friend, attorney, political activist, I could say immigration activist as well, Lauren Martell, will be joining us shortly. But meanwhile, let me give you two websites I would love for all of you to visit when you have the time. First of all, I have my own private website. That's michaelcutler.net, one word, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler.net. Also, I'm a senior fellow with a wonderful organization, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their terrific website is capsweb.org, C-A-P-S. capsweb.org. With the approach of winter, I know the ribbing I sometimes get from them because they are located in beautiful downtown Santa Barbara, California. Great place to visit, great people out there, right on the Pacific coast in Southern California. And here I am in the Northeast in New York. So opposite ends of the country, but this issue pervades the entire country, as we will get to shortly. Now, let me start out by telling you that comprehensive immigration reform is once again rearing its ugly head. If you've been following the news, and there's so much to contemplate, whether it's Benghazi, whether it's Fast and Furious, whether it's, of course, now the lead story, Obamacare, issue after issue after issue. You know, I got to tell you, folks, sometimes I get the feeling in trying to keep up with everything that's going on, that perhaps I'm actually standing under Niagara Falls with an 8-ounce glass and I'm there trying to catch all the water because it certainly comes at us from every direction simultaneously. But immigration really is something that we've got to really focus on. And so before we get into this, let me bring on Lauren. I believe that this is her. Lauren Martell, is that you? I hope it's Lauren. Here we go.
Can you hear me?
Lauren, happy now I can hear you. I feel like we're doing that cell phone commercial. Can you hear me now? Happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you as well. Yes, you know, I have a loud voice, but even with the mute button, nobody can hear me. So now that you've unmuted me, I can talk.
My goodness, we've sprung you. Not quite the same way as the news report that we talked about earlier today. The fact that Al-Qaeda has sprung over 1,000 of their cohorts in various prisons, apparently, in the Middle East and elsewhere. Certainly no terrorist, but you might be a terrorist to people who don't agree with you.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, maybe I should press the mute button a few times when I start talking about
well,
certain
no,
issues.
Well, no, don't do that. I'm just fearful that your adversaries might want to, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, JFK said that we judge people by their friends as well as by their enemies. I think you and I have acquired both groups for the right reasons. What do you think of that?
I agree with you, and one of my friends recently said, the truth will set you free, and it will also give you a long list of enemies. So, you know, sometimes when you speak the truth, you can be doing it alone, but I think people really gravitate towards it, and it's got a magnetic field where authenticity is something that's crucial to sustainability in our country, and I think people are sort of hungry to hear what's really going on and what the truth is, because very similar to what you said in your post to bring about today's discussion that we're going to have, is the fans need to get on high to blow away the smoke of the illusions
yep.
that have been...
You liked that, didn't you?
I did. It was very... You always do a great analogy, and I think that was a good one, because there's been a lot of smoke and mirrors, and, of course, obviously, put up by people who are making an enormous amount of money. When
yep.
we're really looking at some of this stuff, it just comes down to a bottom line of people making a profit.
The bottom line is the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah, and then you just have to define the bottom line, though, right? And where the line is. And a line in the sand has been moving in and moving in, and America really doesn't even have what I would say physical borders anymore. I mean, our line...
That's right. No, you're completely right. No, I was just going to say, you're completely right. By the way, when you were saying that the truth will set you free... I remember when I testified before Congress without the authority of my agency, the joke was the truth will set you free, free to look for a new job. But but you know what? It's about doing what's right. I remember when I was a kid, and I'm a lot older than you are, and I don't know if you have these recollections, but when I was a kid, it was not unusual for somebody in public office, a member of the president's cabinet perhaps, or some guy who was, a member of the city council here in New York or wherever, saying, you know what, this administration has gone so far off the rails, I'm resigning effective immediately. When was the last time, other than that very courageous Justice Department lawyer who was furious at the beginning of the Obama administration over the failure of the DOJ to investigate the Black Panthers who prevented white people from voting in Pennsylvania, when was the last time you remember anybody stepping down from public office because they were disgusted with what they were witnessing every day when they went to work? I can't remember of anybody except that one brave and decent attorney at the Justice Department.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe arguably not as clearly, because I don't think that was his sole reason, and he didn't, you know, say it necessarily out loud. But I mean, Jim DeMint did sort of walk away from a big senator, you know, being a United States senator for South Carolina. You don't see that. That is rare. People of integrity and courage is very rare in D.C., and just, you know, what's happened is even in middle America and rural America, people are clinging on to just what the status quo is, because they're just afraid if they make any moves that they're going to lose what they have. And, of course, this is not true freedom, and our founding fathers understood this in that they
realized... But they have the freedom of choice. No, but wait a moment. They have the freedom of choice, Lauren Martel. They can say, listen... I'm out of here because you're a bozo, and I don't have the stomach to come to this place every day and watch what you're doing. So that freedom is there, but people seem to have lost the moral fiber to do it. You know, they go along to get along, and we are headed the wrong way quickly on a one-way street, and we're picking up speed, it seems.
Well, you know, it's true, and you're right. But, you know, here's some encouraging news that I was reading
about.
You have
encouraging news this Friday evening, day after Halloween? This isn't trick-or-treat, is it?
One, I survived Halloween in October. And here we are in a new month, and all is well in my home.
Well.
So you know, the ICE report that I read that came out on October 30th talks about the particular Indian corporation, and I know you want to get into visas a little bit this discussion.
Oh, I sure do. I sure do. You're talking about Infosys, right?
Yes, this was on, yes, exactly, Infosys, which is a unique name of a corporation, but they got slapped with a $34 million fine. Now, a fine that size is definitely going to make people turn, and so if we don't have the honor and integrity of a majority of the people who are making big decisions that impact American way of life, then you really have to use the deterrent form and the enforcement of law and saying, well, look, if you're not going to be good on your own, you're going to end up suffering negative consequences. And hitting people in the pocketbook is a great way to do it. And as a lawyer, I've been talking to a lot of lawyers that are conservative in nature, and they're really starting to come out and advocate for these conservative perspectives and sort of hold people accountable. And this is being done through, you know, people representing companies that don't want to have to get into the Obamacare Health Act so that they have to use taxpayer money to, you know, fund things that they don't agree with or get into doctors that they don't agree with. These conservative lawyers are coming out of the woodwork, and I'm really glad to see it. And, of course, this was obviously done by the Attorney General. But they slapped a fine on these guys, and I think that it's a good thing. What is disgusting is the way this corporation was getting away with it, and I think you can speak to that.
Yeah, and by the way, I just thought of a new name for that company. How about InfoSyst?
Yes. We have malignancy in America.
What a disease. But I have a question for you. All joking aside, this is not a joke. Here's my question. Biggest fine ever levied on a company for committing visa fraud, right? Nobody went to jail.
$34 million,
$35 million. The numbers bounce around depending on which article. What was the last news program on television or radio where they talked about this that you're aware of?
Honestly, I would never know this unless I did extra homework, which, you know, obviously.
Well, I
got to
tell you,
but
I've been watching TV the past 2 days. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it. I've gone on websites of the programs out there. I haven't seen it. You know, this to me is astonishing. You go to the news programs, and, you know, they'll have a lot about Obamacare. It's understandable. This affects millions and millions and millions of Americans. It goes to the credibility of this government, which doesn't have any. You know, when I was in college, LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, was said to have a credibility gap. This administration has a credibility chasm. I mean, goodness gracious, it's bigger than the Grand Canyon. But the point is, this is a major story, that a company from India used B-1 visas, which are not supposed to allow the aliens who, you know, get that visa to come and actually do work for which they're paid. A B-1 visa, for those of you not familiar with it, is a non-immigrant visa, and we'll do immigration 101. A non-immigrant visa, there's two types of visas, immigrant, non-immigrant. An immigrant visa means here's a green card, whether it's because of a family relationship or you won literally the lottery for diversity, which there's a lot of pressure even with comprehensive reform to end diversity. I do think we are a diverse enough country, and I think most people at this stage would agree. But if you did that, or you were an investor, there's a bunch of ways of getting a green card. So an alien that gets a green card is on the path to citizenship. We admit more than 1 million a year, and those people are immigrant aliens. Non-immigrants are admitted for different purposes, whether it's to go to school, whether it's to be part of an exchange visitor program, whether it's to be tourists, whether it's to do business, whether it's journalists or members of the clergy or government officials, and the list goes on. A B-1 visa enables the alien who has it to enter the United States for a period of up to 6 months to do work, but not work that's paid for here. For example, let's say you owned a factory in Germany, and you wanted to buy milling machines for flour. And you say, you know what, I'm going to buy an American machine. I'm going to go to wherever. I'm going to buy a tractor. I'm going to buy an international harvester tractor, and I want to negotiate a deal because I'm going to buy a whole bunch of them, and maybe I know some other farmers that are going to want them. So I'm going to go to the United States and shop for tractors. Properly, you have a B-1 visa. The salary you earn is paid to you by your home country or in your home country. So you're not here earning money, but you are doing business in conjunction with the work you do back home. Certainly, you're not supposed to be drawing a paycheck here in the United States. Guess what? Infosys told their people, go to America. Here's what you need to tell the folks at the American consulate when you apply. Don't tell them that you're earning money. Don't tell them that you're going to be doing this, and don't tell them that you're going to be doing that. And they'll give you a visa. You walk into the airport and go your merry way, and everything is cool. So for 2 years, or 3 years, they got away with this nonsense. If you look at the magnitude of the fine, it tells you that we're probably talking about hundreds or maybe more workers from India doing high-tech jobs that they did not have the visas to do in America. Normally, that's an H-1B visa job. Now, nothing in the ICE website talked about going after the illegal aliens. They went after the company, but they ignored their co-conspirators,
like
the illegals that were working.
And that doesn't pack. You're right. That dilutes the punch that really should be given, because what should happen is certain people who, you know, conspired to tell, you know, these immigrants that were coming in for the visa how to go about fraudulently, you know, taking advantage of our country, there should be people who are actually individually accountable.
The aliens themselves. But here's the point. Here's the point that I want to make, Lauren, before we move on. The aliens themselves are, in effect, unindicted co-conspirators, because they were the ones who walked into the consulate. They were the ones who walked into the embassy, and they were the ones who walked into that inspection booth at an international airport. And, you know, I did that job for the first 4 years of my career at Kennedy Airport, and you ask people questions. Why are you coming here? Well, I'm coming to work. What kind of work do you do? Well, I have a company back home, or I work for a company back home. I'm just coming here to see how they do business here. That's fine. That's a B-1 visa. So they lie to the inspector, which, by the way, is a 5-year felony, Title 18, United States Code, Section 1001. They lied on their application, again, 1001, and also 1546, making false statements in conjunction with a visa. So these folks were the ones who actually made the statements. They're the ones who signed the applications for the visas. So they get off scot-free. They are wandering around the country somewhere. And there was another case. This isn't the most egregious. There was a law firm in the United States that over a decade or more facilitated the entry of more than 25,000 aliens from God knows what countries. They purportedly had jobs in the United States. They had the proper work visas to work here, but the jobs they had were non-existent. This was just a way of getting them into the country. The attorney in that case, believe it or not, pleaded guilty to one count each of conspiracy and of fraud, and nothing was done to track down more than 25,000 illegal aliens who are now wandering around the country. Now, one of the reasons that the administration, I guess, doesn't like me, and I guess George Bush didn't much like me either, is because I possess something that's very rare and in short supply in immigration today, and that is institutional memory. When they merged customs with immigration and had customs call the shots, which they do largely, they ignore immigration law violations like you cannot begin to imagine. See, everybody thinks, Lauren, and this upsets me, that if we're talking about illegal aliens, we're purely talking about people from Mexico running the Mexican border. Is that a problem? Yes. Is the Mexican border a problem? Absolutely. And not just because of Mexicans, but because of OTMs other than Mexican. And it's not only people from Latin America, and by the way, among the people that are simply looking to work, which creates enough problems by competing with Americans and driving down wages and displacing Americans in the labor force. And in this day and age, I mean, look, we are basically in the same situation that we were in the Depression a generation ago, but we are also getting people from the Middle East. We know that there are terrorists that are entering into Venezuela, members of Hezbollah and the Iranian guard, you know, the Quds troops, the Shock troops. So we have a serious national security breach, but this is happening at international airports across America as well. So everyone says, well, we'll look at the Mexican border. It's a distraction. What no one is looking at is how many aliens are coming into ports of entry like international airports and disappearing. The government claims that we're looking at about 5 million people that I know inside DHS tell me it might be twice as big. We really don't know because Accenture, the company that was contracted to meet the requirements of the 96 change in the law and to meet the requirements laid out by the 9/11 Commission, they got over $1 billion in government money. They've never been able to figure out who's here and who left. So, and by the way, they're an offshore company. They're an offshore company.
Yeah, that sounds like the Obama website right now. And let me just
before you move on,
and that's one of the things that should cause everybody a red flag on even pushing another bill that's been drafted in the last couple of years through into a law, is we've got to just slow down and take a look at what a nightmare and a monstrosity, the chaos that's, you know, Obama, the Affordable
but
Health Care Act has created.
Think of something, though.
Yeah, but hang on.
Wait one second, Lauren. Why did Obama go to a Canadian company rather than an American company? Isn't the U.S. government supposed to use American companies first? You know, in law enforcement, the federal government had to get the company that makes the weapons that we were using to have a factory in the United States because, you know, Beretta and Glock and so forth are actually foreign companies. Glock, German, Beretta is Italian. Mm. They now produce their guns here because for the military to buy those weapons, they had to be manufactured in the United States for the federal government. So why are we using a Canadian company to do the Obamacare website and doing it very badly? Why in the world did Accenture get the contract? And by the way, Accenture wasn't given the contract under Obama. It was given it under George W. Bush. It's both sides of the aisle, folks. I'm an equal opportunity insulter.
Yeah.
But they were headquartered in Hamilton, Bermuda when they got this billion-dollar contract. They've moved. They're now in Ireland. Why in the world aren't we using American companies to get these lucrative contracts, and how do we tolerate companies that get $1 billion? A billion. And they still can't make it work.
Yeah. Well, this is the whole – that is a great word because that's going to – the word tolerate is going to segue into what I was just reading still here on this Infosys case is, you know, the U.S. Attorney Bales is one of the guys that was part of the prosecution. And what I just started thinking, too, is you're right. I mean, at first blush, this seems like, wow, that's great. They find them. But where does that $34, $35 million even go? Back into the government, right? I mean, it's
back
a fine.
Back to the general
right?
fund and, yeah, and crony capitalism again.
So, I mean, it really doesn't. And then this is what they say is, this is U.S. Attorney Bales, and I would love to have you get on the telephone with U.S. Attorney Bales this week. Wouldn't that be fun to just talk to him?
Oh, that would be delightful.
Yeah.
Would be delightful.
But here's the question that he – or this is the premise that he throws out here is, quote, we will not tolerate the actions that misled the United States and circumvent lawful immigration processes, whether undertaken by a single individual or one of the largest corporations in the world, said U.S. Attorney Bales. The H-1B – and the B-1 visa programs are designed and intended to protect the American worker, and we will vigorously enforce the requirements of those programs. Now, this is a direct quote from him, and, you know, just like you said, we have yet to see. I mean, it would be even interesting to see how this settlement is structured, because who knows how they're paying the money out of how much time. I mean, just like you said, it may not even be a pinch to this corporation who's doing lots of money.
By the way, here's something interesting. Usually, when you agree to pay a fine, you're very contrite, at least in public. Okay?
Right.
Do
yeah,
you know that the leaders at Infosys, I have to call it that. I'm sorry, folks. Forgive me. It's probably childish, but I'm furious. Because, by the way, they had a whistleblower in their company a year ago come forward, and you know what that employee of Infosys had to say? They are discriminating against Americans. They are making certain to lay Americans off and not hire them because they want people from India here.
Yeah,
okay?
That's crazy.
So Infosys, I think it's the right name for those bums, issued a statement after they agreed to the fine. This was an agreement. They maintained they did nothing wrong. You know, I have to tell you, I have been in court I don't know how many times arraigning bad guys coming. I always like to go to the sentencing of the people that I've arrested because I like to see my handiwork. I like to see a criminal who was selling drugs or running guns or shooting people or involved with rape or child molesta. When they got sentenced, I wanted to see my handiwork. So I would go out, have a very luxurious breakfast that morning, put on one of my best suits and favorite ties, and sit in the front row and watch Justice Served. But the judge always demands in a plea bargain, as you know, as a lawyer, they have to allocute to the charge. They can't sit there and say, I didn't do it, Your Honor, but they want me to plead guilty. You do that, the plea bargain goes out the window. So they all stand there, and they're very contrite. Yes, Your Honor, I sold drugs to a 15-year-old kid. I never should have done it. I am so sorry that I did this. I wish I hadn't done it. I was really stupid. The guy's lying through his teeth, but that isn't the point. They have to stand there and allocute to it and admit that they did it and agree that it was wrong and express some kind of remorse. Here, Infosys, their people go out there the next day and they issue a press release saying, we didn't do anything wrong. We don't know why they're picking on us.
Well, and for all we know, this money is just going to go right back into somehow, you know, scratching somebody
else's back.
Another contract. Well, that's right.
I mean,
and that's
this
exactly
is so outrageous. Dan Rather did an amazing story called No Thanks for Everything. And it was on HDNet, which is a cable news program that he does, Dan Rather Reports. They interviewed these three or four computer programmers who were displaced by people from India. And I want to focus on this tonight, folks, because I just did a television interview, and the host was fixated on the Mexican border. And the open borders crowd is fixated on the open border. This is not unlike the magician who has some scantily clad 22-year-old little girl come out there in her little getup, and the fan is blowing the smoke, and the lighting is dramatic, and the drum roll, and everyone doesn't know where to look because there's 15 things going on at one time. Well, that's what they're doing at the Mexican border. They are distracting people, and we are ignoring that last year, something on the order of $200 billion was remitted, wired from the United States to third world countries. And if you go to the UN website, folks, you know, you go to the World Bank, this is amazing stuff, because a few years ago when I did this, they had a chart showing what percentage came from which country from the first world in terms of remittances and where the remittances went. Now it's the first world like a big lump. Boom. Originally, when they used to split it up, the United States accounted for about 50% of all of the remittances that flowed from the first world to the third world. So last year, over $400 billion, with a B, flowed from the first world to the third world. I make a presumption if things are more or less the same, and they probably are, $200 billion came out of our economy. Guess which country got the lion's share of remittances that came from the first world?
Well, I'm going to say India, but
that's right.
I know a lot of other countries that we shouldn't be sending any money to also
okay,
benefited.
Okay, name the second. Name the second. Can you name that tune?
I don't know. I want to say like maybe one of the Middle Eastern countries, but
China. So we owe them the note, and then they send us their workers, and they cart our money off through the remittance system.
Yeah.
Now, there's something for you
Chicago,
folks to think.
It's world stage Chicago politics. It's really ugly.
Absolutely. It's a Chicago way. But this has been going on. It goes back to Clinton. It goes back to Reagan with this idea of outsourcing companies. And let me tell you something. This is a very dangerous game. You know, the president took billions of dollars, actually trillions of dollars, and created an economic stimulus program. And what's the premise behind that? Well, economists, and I'm no economist, but economists talk about something known as the multiplier effect. What's the multiplier effect? I'm glad I asked. The multiplier effect says that if you get a dollar because you're paid, and you go out and you buy something with a dollar, the guy that sold you that thing gets a paycheck at the end of the week, because you generated business for him, and then he takes part of his salary and he buys something else, and then the guy that sold it to him or manufactured it or whatever goes out and buys something else. So economists used to say that $1 becomes $5 when it circulates through the economy. Okay? So that means that $200 billion that is just sucked out of our economy, there's no multiplier effect, is the functional equivalent of losing $1 trillion. Now, I know we have a $16 trillion deficit, but $1 trillion is not exactly bird feed. So we've lost that.
No.
We're driving down wages. Americans who were on, who were middle class tax-paying people, owned houses, bought new cars, went on vacations. Some of them, like the people that you will meet if you look at the Dan Rather reports, or you go to my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, post it. If you look at that, you realize that one woman, the gal that worked for Bill Gates of all people, she worked for Microsoft, lost her job, lost her house, lost her 401k, lost her life savings. Now, you might think, well, maybe she didn't have the qualifications. She had an MBA in computer science, was a Phi Beta Kappa graduate, and her prior job was as a senior vice president for a Wall Street bank. She can't get a job in the computer industry because she was blackballed, according to her statement, by Microsoft. And she said that when she went to job counselors, they said to her, there's something wrong with your resume. And she said, do I need to polish it? They said, no, you need to strip it down. People see, you know, MBA computer science. How do you expect to get a job at McDonald's that way? I kid you not.
Well, yeah, and that's a terrible story. But I have to tell you, you know, part of it then comes back on the accountability of the people. And this is where we have to just really, you know, put it down to what can, you know, what can people do locally from where they sit in their own homes? Because this is really, really, it's truly an accountability and an educational issue of the majority of Americans. And I want to tell you, this is an analogy that was just, you know, set out in a seminar that I was at the other day. And it was a young guy who was talking about his family life. And he was like, look, I look at the federal government sort of like the states are the parent of the federal government. And he said it would be very similar. He has young children, but it would be very similar if his children just all of a sudden came to him and his wife and said, look, Mom and Dad, I'm in charge now. Y'all just need to sit down there. I need your wallet, and I need the car keys. I'll be back when I feel like it. If I come back and I have any more extra money left over, I'll let you have a little bit of it. But I'm calling the shots, and you guys need to stay here in the house, and I'm going to go out and do whatever I want to do. In a local little home, you would never allow that to happen. And
I disagree.
So
I have to disagree. Maybe in South Carolina. But let me tell you, in New York, where we have sanctuary policies, or California.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
we
I'm
have policies. Good.
What are you talking about? Children that should just tell their parents what they're doing? And,
No. What I'm saying is we have this malaise at all levels of our government. I understand the analogy. But do you think Mayor Bloomberg in New York is any better than Obama?
No, it's awful. No, I don't. That's what I'm telling you is people elect Mayor Bloomberg over and over again. So I don't know why. That's the definition of insanity. I don't know
Absolutely.
Why people sit back and think it's, they're going to get anything different. So it's been on us because we're parents that have not done our job.
No, you're comparing us to the parent and all government as the children. All right, now I agree with you.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh,
okay,
well, absolutely,
good.
You're right. Forgive me. I thought we were talking about state versus fed. No, if you're talking about that, you're 100% right. Well, I use a different analogy. They are our employees, and we are allowing our employees to come to work 2 hours late, steal stuff out of the supply cabinet, take a three-hour lunch, and then come back for a half hour, and then go home and demand a pay raise.
Well, and I love that analogy. I actually used that analogy the other day because in South Carolina, we have one senator that's really awesome up there, and then we have another senator, Senator Lindsey Graham, who's part of the Gang of Eight that's created this amnesty bill, and I'd love to know exactly who's actually drafted the 1,000 pages, how many different people have been involved in actually the drafting.
And what is Lindsey Graham doing? And Lindsey Graham keeps on talking about the Mexican border. When we secure the border, and this is why tonight, folks, I'm not talking about the Mexican border. I've spoken about it in the past. I will talk about it in the future. But that is, pardon me, only one of many holes in the bottom of our boat, as I told Megyn Kelly when I was on her program back in May. Understand the problem. Do you know that comprehensive immigration reform, besides the national security risk of giving believe me, it won't be 11 million. By the time they're done with this fiasco, you're looking at 30 million or more. National security will be a memory. We could dismantle the military. It won't matter because anybody who wants to kill us will be here. But here's the point.
Yeah, they are here.
It would triple the number of H-1B visas. It would, for the first time, allow the spouses of aliens who have H-1B visas to work and not just do the job that, quote-unquote, Americans are too stupid to do, any job, because the spouses and the adult children, 21 and older, and why in the world would you bring your adult children here? You can't immigrate with adult children if you get a green card, only minor children. They would get an EAD card. EAD is an employment authorization document. And you know what it allows you to do? Any job you want. So that it's not like, well, they also have to be computer programmers, presuming we have a shortage. And believe me, folks, we don't have a shortage. But this document would allow an auto mechanic or whatever to go into a dealership. It doesn't matter if there are 1,000 unemployed auto mechanics in that community. That son of that H-1B visa holder could walk into a dealership and say, here's my employment document. I want to work as a mechanic. And that alien who's here on a non-immigrant visa has as much right to that job as you or I. What do you think of that?
Well, I think it's egregious. And I think Lindsey Graham knows exactly about all that. And that's why
it's good intentional. This isn't an accident, folks.
This is well planned out. This is a strategy
that was carefully crafted by Chuck Schumer, Lindsey Graham, McCain, the Gang of Eight. They know exactly what's in it. There's no surprises in that legislation. They know what's there. The surprise is on us.
Well, that's right. And that's where I am the boss of Lindsey Graham. My taxpayer money is our South Carolina money, pay his salary. Granted, he gets perks from lobbyist groups, and he's going to get perks from international groups and international
immigration lawyers, and God knows who else is probably funding his campaign.
But here's my thing about what we're doing here in South Carolina is we, as South Carolina people, can get educated about this. We can, you know, talk to our neighbors and our friends about this. Through grassroots, as Americans, we can regain and empower the control back to the people, which is where it's always supposed to be. And so Lindsey Graham doesn't have all the power. He should be accountable. He and all of the people who are voting on this particular legislation, October is the month, and the people who want to push this legislation through are working overtime. They get up early in the morning, and they don't stop until they go to sleep. And they are pushing, you know, the agenda as fast as they can. And, you know, it's up to us, the people, to say no to our congressmen and senators up there, to say no. Y'all need to stop and slow down. You need to listen to the people because we're your boss. And so if they're incompetently doing their job, then we interview for somebody else.
And I couldn't agree with you more.
Running against Lindsey right now, and one's very strong and very informed on these issues, and that's Lee Bright. I mean, he has risen to the top of the water, I think, as far as grasping these issues and learning about them. And, you know, I can't even get Lindsey Graham on the telephone, let alone talk to him about the 9/11 Commission or you know, the law of unintended consequences of some of the things that we've just raised tonight.
I've spoken with Lee a couple of times. Lindsey Graham, you want to talk to me? You can reach me through my website, michaelcutler.net. Be delighted to chat with you. But if I'm getting this wrong, Lindsey Graham, I want you to tell me where I'm getting it wrong. Why in the world would you want to bring in three times as many high-tech workers at a time when Americans are out of work? Why would you want to provide identity documents to illegal aliens who snuck into the country and evaded a process that's designed to keep out criminals, terrorists, spies, human rights violators, fugitives from justice, and people who would take the jobs of Americans or become public charges. These are important laws. I spent the first 4 years of my life as an inspector trying to enforce the law at Kennedy International Airport. So when you hear them saying, by the way, here's the other thing that the Republicans who were favoring piecemeal approach. I just wrote an article for CAPS, How Do You Eat an Elephant? And, of course, the answer is one bite at a time. So they're saying, well, we'll do it piecemeal. For those of you who think this is a good idea, for those members of Congress who think this is a good idea, let me explain something to you. And I know one of the Republican messages has been, well, we won't put these people, the illegal aliens, on a pathway to citizenship. Oh, no, we're tough. We're just going to let them work here. Let me tell you what the problem is. So if you are a member of the Republican Party, if you're in touch with your congressman, if a member of Congress is listening, I want you guys to understand that you are undermining America's national security if you think this is a solution, because it's not about giving illegal aliens citizenship that's dangerous. It has its own risks, obviously. But it's about providing illegal aliens whose true identities, countries of citizenship, dates of birth, or date of entry into the United States, or manner of entry, cannot be verified. Remember, no face-to-face interviews, no resources to knock on doors and do a field investigation. They provide a name and fingerprints. If they've never been printed in the United States, there's a pretty good chance that even if they're wanted in other countries, we won't find out. If they use a fake name, it increases the odds, and they get to get a new ID that you want to give them in a fake name. The 9/11 Commission determined that the use of identity documents in false names was the embedding tactic, the way that the terrorists of 9/11 were able to hide in plain sight. They identified 94 terrorists who operated in this country in the decade leading up to 9/11, 59, or about two-thirds of them, used immigration fraud or visa fraud as a way of embedding themselves and entering the country. They had a Real ID Act, folks. Nobody even talks about it. The Real ID Act was created based on the findings and recommendations of the 9/11 Commission. We just had a terrorist attack in Boston, and we're getting ready for Marathon Sunday in New York. New York City on Sunday is doubling the amount of money being spent for security because of the bombing of the marathon in Boston, and we need to. It's over $1 million to protect the runners. So here's the point I want you all to understand. If you give illegal aliens lawful status and identity documents, and I don't care if they're not citizens, if it enables them to travel, and it would, in and out of the country, if it enables them to get a driver's license, and it would, if it enables them to get a Social Security card, you are setting the stage for terrorists to conceal their true identities and attack us again. The MVP award should be given to anybody who would vote for that garbage. Al-Qaeda should give them the MVP award. This violates the findings, recommendations of the 9/11 Commission and common sense. And the last point, and I don't want to run off because I want to hear what you have to say, but forgive me, I'm just in a state of rage. I think my head's going to explode. Claire McCaskill, Senator McCaskill, I doubt she's listening, but if you are Claire, let me tell you something. I tried to call your office. I was told somebody on your immigration team would get back to me. I didn't know you had an immigration team. They never told me the name of the captain of your team. But you were out there screaming bloody murder. You were quoted in the newspapers. Self-righteous indignation. How did they give clearances to Snowden? How did they give a clearance to the Navy Yard shooter in Washington? This is wrong. We need to reevaluate the way we do clearances and background checks. You might be well right on that one. But both Snowden and the shooter had full field background investigations. I held a top secret clearance. Every 5 years I went through that process. And let me tell you, going to your doctor is less intrusive than doing one of those. And they slipped up. But here you are favoring, you've come out in support of legislation that would take people who snuck into the country, came in surreptitiously, the dead of night. We don't know who they are or why they're here, and you want to give them identity documents, and knowing full well that there isn't even the capacity to speak with them in person, let alone do a real investigation? What a disconnect that is. Am I crazy?
Well, look, well, no, you're crazy, but I have to tell you, Mike, the world is crazy. And this is where I want to go with that, is just
sure.
That...
Forgive me for that rant. I just had to get it off my chest.
Well, you're right. But even, like, probably 5 or 6 years ago, maybe less, Hillary Clinton extended the Iranian student visas from 6 months to just 2 years. Now, this is all during the process, and we all know kind of what's going on in Iran right now, and everybody, like, the word on the street right now is that they're 2 weeks away from getting enough enriched uranium, you know, to their centrifuges are spinning, and yeah. So knowingly, this is what does not make sense, and you have to go back and figure out, okay, well, what's behind what's going on here? Again, the smoke and mirrors that you originally said we have to clear so that we can see what's really going on. This was happening while we were sort of like should have been coming down hard on what Iran's doing. But we're actually in a hope from the Clinton influence to try to extend these visas over here. Some of these people that their visas were extended, we have no idea where they went. There was not any extra accountability. You know, the Homeland Security, one of the big articles is that they sort of lost track of more than a million people. And who knows
they
if
did,
that number is even more.
And they did. And under George Bush, by the way, the USCIS, the division of DHS, and you know what I call DHS, don't you? The Department of Homeland Surrender, claimed
right.
to have lost 111,000 immigration files that related to applications for benefits, including 30,000. Think of that number, 30,000. That's half of the stands loaded to the gills at Yankee Stadium. 30,000
yeah.
aliens were given citizenship without the files being provided to the adjudications officer. You want to
Let's
talk about flying blind?
Right. Let's just say that only 10%, but maybe that number's higher. Let's just say, though, for the sake of argument, 10% of those
say
people 1%. Are here for nefarious purposes.
1%.
Right. They can do
so
a lot of damage.
You have 300 terrorists. You have 300 terrorists running around. Look what 19
yeah.
did on 9/11.
I know. This is what I'm telling you. And so this is the disconnect. This is where it goes really crazy. You have to pinch yourself to just say, is this really going on? And I think most Americans are still in that shock and awe. And the bottom line is that we have to wake up, say, yes, it is going on. So, I mean, Hillary Clinton went ahead and did that. Then Benghazi happens. And, you know, there's no accountability really for that today.
But what
no
difference
special...
does it make?
I know. But it always makes a difference. It really does. I believe this.
Oh, are you kidding?
But, yeah, that's her new thing. And now there's even talk of her running for president. Like, people are actually having this and not getting straitjacketed for the idea that that's even a comprehensive idea, that the United States of America could entertain having somebody like that run for president. We have lost our minds. We have lost our compass. We have lost what it takes to be a decent, you know, society that functions well in a functional manner. And so, really, it is up to you, it's up to me, it's up to every single person.
Well, let me tell you what I'm doing,
because
you just said it's up to me, so I just took
yeah.
you up on that. On
yeah.
Sunday morning, I'm getting up at 0:30. There's going to be an eclipse, by the way, on the East Coast, so keep an eye out around sunrise. There'll be a partial solar eclipse, I believe. But I am
okay.
flying
Excellent.
To Minnesota, and I'm going to be
I'm
there.
I'm so excited about that.
My
That's
friend
cool.
Cindy Pugh, Cindy, if you're listening, I can't wait to see you in Minnesota. I met her in Washington when I spoke at an event for the Act for America group, and we've been
yeah.
in touch prior to that. She is a state legislator in Minnesota. She and some other wonderful people in Minnesota are making the arrangements so far. They've got 3 speaking engagements arranged for me and an appearance on a radio program. Here is what
Fabulous.
I want all of you folks out there to do, because I know that those of you that are listening are motivated. I got to tell you how much I appreciate my audience. I love the people who are out there, because
yeah.
you are demonstrating a willingness to pay attention to something more than Dancing with the Stars. I mean, it's all well and good to watch those TV programs, junk food for the mind, or as my former partner would have said, fun for the feeble-minded. But we live in a very dangerous era, folks. I don't think America has been more at risk than at the time of the bombing of Pearl Harbor. And I have to use an analogy that I used when I met with Michael Chertoff, because we both spoke at Chapman Law School. And by the way, here's something for you folks out there to think about. The reason that I'm going to Minnesota, the reason I'm so excited is this. The news on television and most radio programs is devoid of coverage about this issue, and not because it's something I'm intimately involved with, but when you stop and think about it, this immigration issue is the most serious threat to our well-being because it means that criminals and terrorists can enter the country. We are bringing in workers to undermine the American workforce, which is exactly what Alan Greenspan, by the way, recommended when he testified for Chuck Schumer April 30th, 2009, where he said we've got to open up immigration quotas because the Americans with skills and education, people that he came to call, I kid you not, the privileged elite, were earning a wage premium. These are all his words, not mine. Don't send me the hate mail. Send it to Greenspan out in the Hamptons or wherever the heck he's hanging out. And he said that we've got to, you know, make Americans compete with foreign workers so that we can take some of that money away from them because they're making too much money. I kid you not. So when you're trying to figure out if you have enough money to pay the heating oil this winter, remember, Alan Greenspan thinks of you as the privileged elite, so wallow in your new status that he gave you. But understand
right. Well, we
the problem.
Really are more and more like a third world country. I
we
mean,
are.
Kind of what
we're headed the wrong way. We're headed down. But here's my point. If TV won't cover it the way they should, I have decided that I will travel anywhere to be able to speak with our fellow Americans, and that's why I'm going to Minnesota for 5 days, so that I could meet with them, hopefully meet with some of their congressional delegation. I know they're trying to arrange for that also. And I'm willing to do this anywhere, any place, in touch with me, either through CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. I work closely with them on these issues. Or you can reach me directly at my website, michaelcutler.net. We have to arm ourselves with the information. So when the politicians go out there and create these BS projects, you know, the virtual fence, Secure Border Initiative Network. That was George W.'s pet program, Secure Border Initiative Network, SBI Net. You know, it sounded like they dug up General MacArthur himself and he was leading the charge. It cost over $1 billion. And when I was on Lou Dobbs when he was at CNN, he said, Mike, what do you think about the virtual fence? You know, the Lou Dobbs voice. I said, Lou, it'll do what it was designed to do. Cost tons of money and stop virtually nobody. And I confronted Chertoff about this. I said, you know what? It took 44 months after we were attacked at Pearl Harbor to win the war. We built fleets of airplanes that had never existed, fleets of ships, tanks, bazookas. Heck, we built atomic weapons with brand new technology. Here we are, and this was in 2009. I said, we're coming up soon on the 10th anniversary. We're coming up at that point on the 15th anniversary of the terror attacks in 93. People seem to have forgotten that. A guy by the name of Cansey shoots up the CIA January 93, and 1 month later, the first attack at the Trade Center. What do those attacks have in common? Men from the Middle East who gamed the visa process, gamed the immigration benefits program, including the first amnesty of 86, so they could kill people in America. And the Clinton administration did absolutely nothing. In fact, they facilitated more aliens who shouldn't have been granted citizenship to be naturalized under a program known as CUSA, Citizenship USA, that one of my buddies in testifying before Congress aptly referred to as the Jiffy Lube process. So when my friend Neil said that, he was promptly removed as the head of investigations of a major field office. So understand the problem that we're up against, folks. Immigration is not about discriminating against skin color. It's not about racism. It's not about xenophobia. It's not about being antisocial if you have a peephole and doorbell on your front door. It's not antisocial if you ask people to identify themselves before you unlock your door. That's called common sense. Knock-knock jokes are universally accepted around the world because people know that if you have a door and somebody wants to get in, the customary way of seeking entry is to knock on the door, right? Knock-knock jokes. Here, if you say that we should have control over who gets in, you're a racist, you're a bigot, you're a xenophobe, you're a nativist. How about somebody that just wants to stay alive?
What you have to realize is that the art of war, the highest form of the art of war is to win a battle without raising a sword.
Yes.
And what you have to understand is that America has true enemies, and the true enemies want to beat us and cripple us without necessarily having to do a kinetic battle, although they're prepared to do a kinetic battle as well. But for them to just come over here and actually not have to do anything extra, really, we just basically, you know, oil the wheels or, you know, help
grease
them.
Grease the skids, and we're out of here. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, roll out the red carpet for them to come over.
then they don't even have to, you know, what do they have to even fight? They're already here. And so it's brilliant from a strategy of the people who are really orchestrating what's going on. And this, you know, it's not a conspiracy if they're really trying to do it, you know? So this is
well,
where
no,
people
it,
need
it
to get beyond.
Well, no, it could be a conspiracy, but this isn't a fantasy. Look, folks, understand
right.
what we're looking at. The United Nations was very clear. I just got a 100-page report on how remittances should be dealt with so that the immigrants who send the remittances shouldn't have to pay as much money. And I got this from a former counsel over in Congress. And he said to me, Mike, why in the world have they spent all this time, money, effort, and attention to the remittances? And there's a very easy answer. If you look at the UN websites, they said that the goal now is to reduce the cost of remittances. I used to say that Rod Serling was writing the script. It's not Rod Serling, boys and girls. It's the United Nations. The United Nations is eagerly anticipating passage of comprehensive immigration reform. I didn't say it. They
and
did in their reports.
That's right. And what you
and
have
they
to
said,
is
and they said,
the,
if we enact comprehensive reform, remittances will go up. What do you think of that?
Well, I just think it's, you know, it's a huge conflict of interest to the best interest of the United States of America. And the bottom line is that people who have a seat at the table at the United Nations have very different views, world views, than we do. And the whole idea of this coexisting and the whole idea of a whole United Nations and eventually potentially one world situation, it's just a pipe dream, ultimately, because there's no way that that can really physically and theoretically even occur. And so,
by the way,
I got to tell you this.
Do you know that India was so the government of India was so angry that we boosted the cost of an H-1B visa for computer programmers from I think it was $1,000 now it's $2,000 per visa. How do you think the Indian government said they were going to resolve the conflict? They were going to take us to the World Trade Organization and seek sanctions against America. And
yes.
by the way, there were articles in the India Times where India complained that we hire Mexican farm workers. They said their farm workers would work harder and be a better source of labor for America than Mexico, and we need to start hiring Indians instead of Mexicans because it was discriminatory. I kid
yeah.
you not.
Oh, we're going to see more and more things go to the quote-unquote try to have the jurisdiction go to the world
yes,
court.
To the UN and to organs
and,
of the United Nations.
You know, and here's another thing, and I hate to keep harp, you know, basically bringing up Lindsey Graham here, but he thought Samantha Powers would be good for America. Now, Samantha Powers is very, very, she's the, you know, United States ambassador to the United Nations. She is very open to what the United Nations has to say. She is very much unlike John Bolton, and you could argue
yep.
that anybody who sits on the United Nations isn't really you know, looking at America's best interests, you know, they always have, you know, they're dealing with two different, you know, they're serving two masters, really.
No, I don't believe that. You know, I met John Bolton in the green room. We had a lengthy conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm not claiming
yeah.
that, you know, a 45-minute conversation is the be-all and tell-all. But my sense from that conversation and from what I've seen him say on TV and from what I've read about him, is that he
yeah.
understands that he's there to represent America's best interests. That's what he was there for.
Right, right.
Just like
and
Arthur
you know,
Goldberg,
that,
just like
know.
A bunch of other people in years past that were assigned as ambassador to the United Nations. Today, the
right.
landscape is shifting under our feet. Folks, here's the deal. You need to educate yourself on the issues. I'm glad to provide this program. I hope that it's helpful to give you the facts that you're not going to get elsewhere. But then you need to take this information and make certain that you use it in conversations with your elected representatives. You need to make certain that you reach out to your neighbors and get them involved. You know, if Americans had one-tenth the interest in politics that we have and who's going to win the – right now we just had the World Series, the Super Bowl, Dancing with the Stars, whatever. Imagine if we had that level of interest in our own government. And you know why we should, folks? Because this is nothing less than your future, your children and grandchildren's future, and the realization or the failure to realize your dreams and aspirations. First and foremost, I want to remind you, our immigration laws were enacted to protect innocent lives and the jobs of American workers. When you could see proposals on the books by members of Congress, the Gang of Eight and all these other knuckleheads, saying that we need to give out more H-1B visas, we need to provide employment authorization to the spouses and kids of H-1B visa holders, we need to do everything we can to give millions of illegal aliens employment authorization at a time when we admit more foreign workers than the number of new jobs that are being created. All I have to ask is one thing. What could possibly go wrong with that?
Well, Mike, it's always a pleasure to be on your show, and I'm very much inspired to do what I can, you know, locally here in South Carolina as far as continuing to try to, you know, fortify our conservative contingent that's up in Washington, D.C., and to also really, you know, get across to, if enough people call these congressmen that are eventually going to have to vote on the DREAM Act,
yep,
and say, slow it down. You know,
comprehensive,
I mean, the
immigration
website,
reform.
Yeah, the Obama website's not even working. We don't want to jump into another law that's going to be a nightmare. I think that alone is enough to put the brakes on for this, hopefully. Unfortunately, what's happened in this particular administration and in administrations in the past, because I agree with you, Mike, it's not a Republican or Democrat issue.
No, these are American issues, folks.
There's been bad decisions on both sides. But ultimately, you know, what really is going to make a difference is American people just not standing up for things anymore. But this administration will try to circumvent laws anyway. They deal with what they want to do, and if they don't get their way through the due process, you know, they'll just not fund a program, or they'll extra fund a program that's going to go the way they want it to go.
They'll issue executive orders. Look, to this administration, and, you know, I'm not being partisan, folks. I'm registered as a Democrat my whole life, but I vote independently, make no mistake about that. But it seems that this administration views the Constitution, the legislative process, and the borders of the United States all as one thing. And you know what it is? A speed bump. That's not what the Founding Fathers had in mind. How's that for an interesting analogy, Lauren?
Well, it is, and I think it's up to us to let them know that it's more than a speed bump. It is the foundation, and it's the law of the land, and that we do have to find ways to enforce it. And actually, I'm looking forward to, in the next couple weeks, reading the act myself, reading the Comprehensive Immigration Act, and also to just find out how we can sue somebody. I'm ready to sue. I'm ready to
sue. There you go.
So
there
I'd
you
like
go.
To get a little piece of this fine. You know, where's this $34 billion fine going, Mike? Let's get a piece of that and then keep moving from there.
Well, what can I say? You know, I'm going to be heading to Minnesota on Sunday. I will be back Friday. I don't know what my I do know I should be in town early enough to be doing this program next week. I'm just not certain, airlines being what they are and travel being what it is. I hope to join everybody again, same time as tonight, but we will see how things play out. But, you know, I will try to be here. If I don't, I will try to have a guest host filling in on November 15th. Just so you know, I'd be doing a debate at Briarcliff College out on Long Island on immigration with a former colleague, George Weisinger. He's now a professor at that university. He earned his PhD in sociology. So the next two Fridays are kind of up in the air, but try to tune in, folks, because I will try to provide a guest host for the 15th. I will try to be here on the 8th, which is next Friday, but then we go back to business as usual afterwards. And I hope to have an interesting story or two to tell you next week, presuming I can get home and get on the air in time about my trip to Minnesota. I am so looking forward to being there with Minnesotans. They're great folks. They are very upset, as we all should be, about what is going on. And at the end of the day, Tip O'Neill, former Speaker of the House, had said that in the end, all politics was local. The damage being done by Washington doesn't stay in Washington. You know, they say what happens in Vegas doesn't stay in Vegas. Well, what happens in Washington doesn't stay in Washington. It trickles down to the whole country. What they are doing and not doing impacts every American from coast to coast and border to border, and they need to be made accountable. It's time that we stood up against those who would enact legislation that is not in the best interest of America or Americans. They might be motivated because they want those campaign contributions, but where I come from, I see that as a corrupt way of doing business. As a federal agent, I was not allowed to accept a cup of coffee. These folks are accepting lots of money and understand exactly what's happening. The antidote to campaign contributions is American voters. There are 300 million of us, and there's only 545 of them in Congress. So 535, rather. What did I say, 545? So understand the issue, folks. We, the people, have got to make it clear to our elected representatives that if they go down the wrong path on comprehensive reform, that sort of thing, not only won't we vote for them, but we will work tirelessly to get anybody who will oppose them elected. Let them find out what it's like to be on the unemployment line, because God only knows enough Americans are there right now. They will have plenty of company. Lauren, last words?
Awesome. Well, it's just always an honor and a privilege to be on your show. Michael, you do great things. I just hope to have you continue doing your work. I'm looking forward to hearing how Minnesota is. I have those similar mutual friends, have not yet met them, but they're great people. So I can't wait to hear how your trip is. And as always, it's really good to catch up with you. I learn something every single time, and that's a good thing. So continue the great work, and I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you, kiddo. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for joining us today. It's always fun having you on board to have this conversation that we need to have with our elected representatives, folks. There's a little hint there. Make those phone calls on Monday morning. Send those letters. Send the faxes. Let them know that we are paying attention to them. You know, my dad used to say that I would teach people how they should treat me by demonstrating what I was willing to accept. Do you think that your elected representatives are getting the wrong idea about what you're willing to accept? If so, you're not doing your job.
Yeah, we're not, as Americans, we are fundamentally not victims, and our elected officials are, you know, victimizing us at this point. And it's just like you said, we don't have to tolerate it, and we need to make sure that we follow through, though. Not just talking, but walking. The walk and the talk has to go together for action to occur. And it needs to be kinetic, and it needs to be in mass, I think. So, but God bless, and again, have a great weekend. I'm going to hang up now, Mike, but look forward to catching up with you. Bye.
All right, kiddo. Thanks for joining us. Thank you. Well, that was Lauren Martell. Always great having her join me on the program and having you out there join us. I hope that this program is helpful to you. I hope I give you some ideas about the approaches that you need to take. But really and truly, folks, at the end of the day, those elected representatives understand the strength in our votes, the strength in our voices, if only we are willing to exercise them. And that's something that we really must do. We've got to start taking government seriously. We need to take the democratic process of voting and reaching out to politicians just as seriously. We can't be passive about this. We are living in a dangerous era. It's certainly a historic era. It was the greatest generation that saved America during the Second World War. I don't want ours, God forbid, to be remembered as the last generation. Again, I want you to remember those two great websites I want you to visit, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org, my great friends out there in California. Hope they're listening. And look forward to seeing you hopefully next week, depending on the airlines. You never know, folks. So we'll be flying in on Wing It a Prayer, and with a little bit of luck, I'll join you next week at this time. Remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. Have a good weekend, everybody. Good night.